The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for All About Steve from 2009. If you do not wish to have this movie spoilt, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a quirky romantic comedy or a disturbed stalker story? We watched All About Steve from 2009 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy. Oh boy.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project, this time checking out All About Steve from 2009. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host,
suggester of this movie, Christian Fletcher. Thank you so much, Trevor. It's great to have you back. I think I even subtly paused for a little bit of applause there. That's pretty bad of me.
It's all good. We can imagine applause in our own heads.
You know? Definitely. And whether they're applauding the movie that we watched this time around, we'll have to wait to hear about that at the very end. So thanks so much for having me back and letting me suggest this movie, which would normally not be something that I would have suggested.
No, that's all good. I mean, I always like to, like, movies I know next to nothing about, I don't mind when those pop up because it gives me something fresh to check out.
Definitely, and not just the obvious, even though a lot of people have told me we haven't done some of the obvious ones yet, so watch this space. I've been adding to my list recently, so it's always good when I hear from people, but as we always say, you can post things on the website as well too, so, but yeah, we'll speak about that at the end.
yes, we do have a couple of requests brewing in the background that we've received via email and on Facebook that are under consideration. I'm just trying to work out a good time to put those in. So
definitely.
We haven't forgotten you guys. They're definitely on the cards.
And probably try to work out the movies that are, you know, whether you should take credit for it or whether you should say they suggested it. Sometimes it's hard to decide.
Fair enough.
I take full credit for this one. So I was at Universal Studios a few months ago and All About Steve was referenced when they pointed to one of the filming locations on the Backlot tour. And I remember thinking, wasn't that movie a dud? Hence me suggesting it for the podcast. So that's where we lead us to this this situation.
That's all good. Now, if anyone out there didn't watch All About Steve in preparation for this or hasn't seen it before, I do have a synopsis here. Convinced that a CCN cameraman is her true love, an eccentric crossword puzzler trails him as he travels all over the country, hoping to convince him that they belong together.
Could we maybe say this would be the only time in history the crossword puzzler would be used in a movie synopsis?
Yeah, it's an interesting choice for a movie synopsis. I mean, it doesn't normally come up.
I do know that Sandra Bullock's character does say at some stage what the actual scientific, I don't know if that's the word, correct term is, but it doesn't come to mind right now. So I think crossword puzzle is probably a good way to look at it. And I was, you know, even though it did suggest it, I was a bit like you, Trevor, going in completely blind and going off pretty much this poster of her, I think, shoving an umbrella into Bradley Cooper's face. And that's sort of where I was coming from. So
That umbrella.
Think would play so much of a part in the movie as it does, even though it's sort of, yeah, anyway, I don't want to step too far ahead, but we see that play off. But the big thing about this movie was, this was pretty much the film that came out after Sandra Bullock finally won her first Academy Award with The Blind Side in, I believe, 2009. So I think this is probably why this movie has got a bit of flack, because it was compared a lot to the Academy Award winning performance from earlier that year.
Quite possibly. Now, that actually gives me a perfect segue, Christian, because we should probably talk about the awards that this movie was nominated for or won. So, pretty much, it was a bit of a sweep on the older Razzie Awards. It was nominated for Worst Director for Phil Traill, Worst Picture from Fox 2000 Pictures, and Worst Screenplay for Kim Barker. It won a Razzie for Worst Screen Couple, being Sandra Bullock and Bradley Cooper, and Sandra took out the gong for Worst Actress.
And I think it's probably not the first time she's appeared on the Rufus Project. I know we had her in Speed 2 Cruise Control, so we won't give too much away. Listen to our previous podcast with that. But I don't know if it was her. I think it might have been... No, it probably wasn't even her that turned up to one of the Razzies and accepted the awards. I think it might have been Halle Berry, actually. But yeah, interesting. I didn't think they scooped the pool so much with All About Steve.
Well, they certainly did. But we shall move on to our turkey trivia. I think you came very close to giving some of my turkey trivia away there, Christian.
Sorry.
We'll get there. Now, this movie is rated 4.8 out of 10 on IMDb. It had a budget of $15 million, so it was quite cheap, which probably helped it technically being a success with a box office of $40 million.
Eek, but as we know, it sort of doubles when you include marketing, so yeah, it sort of just scrapes in. But
Scraped in.
It's also one of those movies that when you think of sort of a, I don't know if a rom-com's the right word for it, let's just call it a rom-com, but yep, this type of movie, even $15 million, you do sort of struggle to see where the money goes. but yeah, I would have been a bit shocked, I think, if it had been any higher. But okay, that's the box office. So it did make more than I was expecting, although I do have no recollection of this playing Australian cinemas. I may be wrong.
It may be one of the ones that turned up and left again. I don't know. But as you were mentioning, Sandra Bullock did indeed win a Razzie for Worst Actress, and she did show up to the awards to claim her prize. Along with turning up, she brought along a whole station wagon full of DVDs of the film to hand out to the attendees and ask them to watch or rewatch it. And if they had decided that she was not the worst actress and changed their minds after watching it, she promised to come back the next year, hand her award back in, and buy drinks for everybody.
I wonder what did happen.
I'm guessing she kept her Razzie.
Oh, gosh. So, yeah, that must have been in the deep recesses of my mind, that bit of trivia. So thanks for clarifying. So, and I was really surprised even to see Sandra Bullock's name in the... credits for producer. So, you know, sometimes you do wonder if a lot of these projects are not vanity projects, probably the wrong word to use, but it's something that she possibly was pushing for as a bit of a star vehicle for herself.
Quite possibly. Now, just going on to some of the other trivia, one thing that I thought was interesting, when Mary is soaking in the tub and we've got the operatic song playing in the background, the singer is Helga Bullock, Sandra's mother.
Oh, okay. So keeping in the family. So she's like, if I'm going to sync with this dud of a movie, I'm going to bring my family members down with me.
Oh, well, like if I'm going to be a producer, I'm going to get my mum some royalties for that music.
Definitely. I'm surprised she didn't cast family members in some of the roles. But hey, never know. They could have been extras.
Quite possibly. Now, the screenplay for this film was featured in the 2006 Blacklist, which is a list of the most liked unmade scripts of the year.
Okay, so what? So 2006, did you say?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So someone probably, the fact that made the list, people might have gone, this needs to be made.
Yes. It took a few more years before we got there, but yeah, certainly the script was apparently popular.
And whether it was a good decision that they made the film, we shall see.
We shall definitely find out. And in an interesting little, well, I don't know how interesting this is, but the last bit of trivia I could find was that in the movie poster, the umbrella we mentioned earlier is red and white, but in the movie, it's blue and white.
Whoa!
Shock, gasp, controversy on the colour of the umbrella.
Maybe they thought the red would, match the red platform boots that she wears, but I don't think you can even see them in the poster. So, and hey, from the sounds of it, not that many people saw it and not that many people cared.
Yeah, I don't think the colour was all that much of a concern. Well, before we do talk about the movie proper, now, for those who haven't heard the Rufus Project before, our intent with this podcast is to take a movie with a less than stellar reputation and see if it is actually redeemable overall and deserves another chance. So to do that, we do need to set our baseline. So what I've done is I've grabbed a review, and this basically shows what we're working from. The title of this review is, "This movie is so bad, I wanted to erase it from my memory."
And knowing my experience of IMDb with this movie, there'd be quite a lot to choose from. So thanks for finding a corker for us, Trevor. Sorry to interrupt. Good.
Well, this is actually from Amazon, but there you go.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So, still, they exist.
Yes, yes. Short and sweet. Two words that do not apply to this movie. This goes down as one of the worst films I have seen in a very long time. There is not one redeeming feature in it. It is truly that bad. Sandra Bullock has the ability to do so much more than this. Do yourself a favor and back away from it. Do not waste a dime on this one. One star.
I'm wondering if perhaps you picked this because it mentioned redeeming features.
Maybe.
But as you say, we've got to have a baseline, so it can only work up or sideways or get even worse. So, interesting. So,
indeed, indeed. So, in this 99-minute feature, we have a very soulful opening tune. And yeah, initially I was a bit puzzled over the crossword theme of the opening titles.
Had you not gone in with sort of plot summary in mind? Because I know that I did.
I had not even looked at the plot summary.
Okay, so that would sort of enhance it. But hey, Trevor, I was, you know, just to step back a little bit from what you were saying, I was already sort of wowed by just seeing the 20th Century Fox logo. It's so good when you see those old studio logos.
Yeah, that's true. That is very, very true.
Whether it necessarily means a good movie. I know 20th Century Fox does tend to release some duds, so I don't know. But, yeah, I can see how you'd be a bit confused by the crossword credits, but I did think it was quite clever, especially jumping ahead. I know, like, at the end of the movie, they did the end with the, and then the end coming off that. So there was a couple of times when they did the same in the opening credits, and, you know, clever enough, but I can understand how it could be confusing going in, not knowing any of the plot.
Well, it certainly stuck with the theme, and as we got to meet Mary, as played by Sandra Bullock, you couldn't help notice that the camera spent a lot of time focusing on her boots.
Oh, definitely.
Those red boots.
Oh, and look, I was a big fan of them, and we see them come up a lot. And look, I know, Trevor, I'm probably jumping ahead, but we do sort of go back and forward with these movies. But it was one of those elements of the movie that I thought there'd be some kind of a payoff from. But I don't know. They do keep us guessing the whole time. There's a lot of lot of emphasis put on her red boots, but what I thought more amusing in that opening scene, because we find out, you know, obviously, that we mentioned earlier that she's a crossword puzzler, and the part that I find funny is just about everybody in the street that she sees is reading the newspaper and just so happens to be doing the crossword. I just find it quite interesting that it's setting up that just about everybody is influenced by her work.
Yeah. Well, we should probably mention that, yeah, she creates the crosswords for the local paper. And she is so pleased looking over people's shoulders and just a smug look on her face as they're doing the crossword. I'm just going, you are obsessed. That is coming across very, very clearly. And the fact that the obsession with the crossword comes across so clearly, even before a word has said, just, I think, that the heights it goes to throughout the movie, it's kind of like, did we need to go so strong with the crosswords at the opening?
Yeah.
Because further down the track, when she's really going over the top with it, and some of the internal monologue she does, which covers as narration, you're still going, yes, you're into crosswords, we know. Can we actually get some plot going? No, you're going to talk about crosswords some more. Okay.
And the problem with doing this, you know, for the initial opening scenes, it almost doesn't have any sort of reality. Okay, we know people can be obsessed with things, but we also know they can talk about everything, anything else as well. But Mary, they just seem to set up from, you know, day one as being so obsessed with crosswords, it almost needs to come out in all of her speech, you know, quoting all these. Well, not just crosswords. We find out that she's quite smart and has a big knowledge and a lot of facts, a lot of useless facts, by the way. But it seems to be that it just seems to be the only thing that sort of comes out of her mouth. And, you know, and I was saying about how everyone in the street seems to be doing the crosswords. She even comes into work where the crosswords are printed, and even the staff are obsessed with the crosswords. So you're like, yeah, we get the idea. You're setting up the choose a crossword puzzler. Move on.
But I think, like, they kind of hint at the fact that, you know, she knows all these random facts. She knows all this trivia about basically anywhere and everywhere she goes. She just can rattle off facts about anything related to what she's doing at the time. And I think that that's tied back with, you know, the fact that she's researched all these things, which makes her so good at creating the crosswords.
Yeah, but it's but it almost feels like 10 minutes to get that point across, complete with credits.
They definitely get it across later when, like, when she's stuck on a bus chasing after the Steve character, and she talks so much about so many random facts that the bus driver tricks her into getting off the bus and drives away.
As cruel as that was, I do love the part where it cuts back to the bus and everyone inside cheering.
Yeah,
because she talked the ear off everyone. But now, this was an interesting movie in terms of, like, we mentioned the opening, but I don't know, it started to take a turn for me very quickly when the boss essentially says to her to get a life. You know, like, we understand it. Mary's a really difficult character because you don't know whether she's supposed to be, as we find out, we don't know if she's supposed to be insane or she's just very, I think as Bradley Cooper says later, she's very hyper, which I think sort of, I suppose, sums it up well. But I don't know, there's this big thing very early on to being normal is what you need to be. And I don't know, it just sort of hit a nerve with me straight away. And I'm like, oh, is that kind of the direction you're going? You know, that typical, you're not normal, so you've got to find your way to grow and get out of this. And I don't know, it just sort of was a bit of a sour note very early on.
Yeah, they don't waste much time in setting up that everyone thinks that she needs to act differently. I think even her father basically says, if she keeps wearing those boots, we'll never have grandchildren.
Again, I'm thinking the whole time, okay, the boots are going to end up as being something.
yeah, so much focus on the boots. I even noticed when she gets home after, for some reason, she goes to a career day with primary school students. Why are primary school students at a career day? That was confusing.
And why would... And I can just imagine the short list of them organising. I don't think the crossword puzzler would have quite made it.
No. And the kids absolutely roast her for it as well, followed by sad music as she goes home after being panned by these kids.
But I did love the irony or hypocrisy or whatever you want to call it when the kids go, what, you still live at home? And I think she shoots back something like, hey, you guys do too. But little things that. But, you know, hey, I'm not saying this is a funny movie. It doesn't come across very often, things like this. But as you said, she goes back to home where she lives with her parents. But I don't know, a big thing is made about her living at home, but it's only a temporary thing because she's got asbestos or whatever they're working out, or she's got... She's getting it fumigated, I think.
That's right, yeah.
Yet it seems to...
The whole thing about, letting the fumes clear after fumigation.
Yeah, but no one seems to remember that she has another place to go. It all just seems to be about you living with your parents at the moment, you know?
Yeah. But I did notice when she went upstairs to get ready for a date, it has a... It's very, very quick shot, but I saw sitting in her cupboard, there was a jacket with a crossword pattern. On it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I know that it was in her room where she's got, she talks to her hamster, Carol, that's right. So the name's, quite interesting name for a hamster there. But I noticed in her bedroom she's got crossword themed everything, like there's a bag and she's even got, did you notice even the eye chart? You know what, the eye chart that optometrists use, almost like she needs motivation to think of letter combinations or something. But, they definitely were ramming that down our throats.
I mean, there was one line she was saying through her monologue/narration where she said that crosswords are the most fun you can have without passing out. What?
And I'm like, hang on, I've been to some pretty wild parties. She obviously hasn't been to things like that. But that's one thing I'm getting quite early on in this movie, like, you know, the whole, you know, reputation of it being sort of a dud. And I'm like, this is a very awkward script. So you don't know whether, as I said before, you don't know whether the Mary character is supposed to be played as being a bit cuckoo and actually insane, or she is just quite hyper and a bit, say, misunderstood. But, doesn't quite know the way to go. But the funny thing is, after... Just to go back a little bit, after she does the whole career fair with the kids, I noticed the credits start back again. Felt like I was watching a television movie or something. It was quite weird.
Yeah, it was. It was a bit odd. I tell you what, I thought it was very, very weird when Bradley Cooper turns up for the date and she apparently hasn't put too much thought into her dress or whatever, and she sees how cute he is, immediately runs back upstairs, and you start hearing the riff from Short Skirt, Long Jacket by Cake.
Yes, and I'm thinking, which are nice in the credits, yeah.
If she ends up in a short skirt and long jacket, then this music is so on the nose. Okay, short skirt, that's fine. She's just wearing a short skirt. Then Bradley Cooper goes, "It's raining outside. You better wear this." Oh, God. Oh. Are you serious? That is just... Let's just crowbar that in there.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the thing. Like I mentioned earlier about that whole, it's stooping to that whole level of her not being normal. Now it had to stoop to that whole level of her having to be, to change her appearance to fit in with, because he's so, wow, I've got to do the same thing. And essentially all she did was kind of, I think, open up her, yeah, top a little bit more and push the bra up. But, yep. Yeah, and so already this movie was hitting a lot of notes where you're just like, I don't know, it just such bad morals. And I'm not normally on about things like that with movies, but for some reason, this movie in particular, those things just didn't feel quite right.
Yeah, I mean, another thing that which I think I didn't like at all is the second she gets in Bradley Cooper's car, Steve as the character, all about, yes, Steve, of course. She quickly looks in the back of the car, and there's like a baseball glove and just some basic sports equipment, and she just goes, "Oh, he's not gay. Good." Hey, seriously, I mean, I know we've progressed a lot over the past few years, but even the 2009, that seems a bit on the nose to say, oh, he's a sporty guy. He's a manly man who plays sports. He can't possibly be gay. Come on.
But then it also comes back to the whole thing of, do you really think a gay guy is going to, it would have been Tinder, but whatever they're using to meet up, I don't think a gay guy is going to lure you in.
Yeah, I think it was a blind date set up by the parents.
Oh, okay.
That was the impression I got.
That sounds like about right.
The parents got together and organised blind dates between these two.
Talking about the parents, actually, the whole time I'm thinking, is the father an older actor that I'm not recognising? Was he anyone of significance?
I'm not too sure. I mean, there were quite a few familiar faces.
That kept popping up in this one.
They kept popping in here.
Yeah.
Mr. Horowitz was Howard Hessman.
Nope, doesn't sound familiar.
Does it ring any bells?
Actually, sounds like
I can do the good thing of guy on podcast looks up the internet. apparently, he had some small parts in the Andy Griffith Show.
Okay.
He was in the TV movie A Christmas in Vermont.
So, yeah, I don't think I've recognised him in something. He might have just had that look about him. But yeah, you mentioned the cast. So we've got, is it Thomas Hayden Church as well, who ends up turning up? I don't know if I'm stepping... Going a few. Oh, hey, we're all over the place anyway. He ends up being the guy that is essentially the newsreader that Bradley Cooper ends up filming. And I don't know if it's just me. Actually, no, I am jumping ahead because I had the scene in the car where you mentioned about the whole, oh, he's not gay, and pretty much just goes into a very awkward kissing / trying to make love to Bradley Cooper scene.
Yeah, and he's totally in it until she just doesn't stop talking. Even I was thinking, how is he putting up with this at all? Okay, fine, he's got this woman on top of him who he, it says later that he feels is quite attractive. And yeah, she just doesn't stop talking to the point where he finally just goes, he fakes receiving a phone call and just says, "I've got to go to work. Hey, you could totally hang out with me while I'm on the road. Bye." It's like, okay. Oh, you've got a job. Oh, that's a terrible. What a shame. Like, you know, so blatantly obvious, and just leaves her on the side of the road in the jacket, her bra, short skirt, and his umbrella.
His umbrella, which we see come back quite a bit, which I thought would be like the red boots and have sort of a big payoff, but again, doesn't really go anywhere. It sort of almost just becomes part of the character, I suppose, or part of her quirks. But that's the thing, like, I've been very confused about Mary as a character, and even by now it started to come across that she was quite, like, I know we mentioned she's quite talky and spouting all these facts during, you know, in the car scene, but it is like she is coming across a little bit insane, and I don't know if that's the way Sandra Bullock was playing her. You start to think it's going to become sort of like, I don't know, a revenge story.
Yeah, I know, because after that, like, she does, like going back into the house and she's acting like it was a big successful date as he drives off. And again, you know, just obviously this just showing how out of touch with the world this woman is. And, and it really isn't a generous portrayal of her character.
Oh, definitely, because you almost want to sympathize with her, but you don't also but you don't know if she's also the bad guy. Not the bad guy, that's probably not the word, but yeah, you do want to sympathize with her, but you because she could just be misunderstood, but you don't know whether they're playing her as sort of a villainous, revengeful type character because of all the things that have sort of been put upon her up to this stage of the movie.
Well, considering the next scene she does is gets all giddy and submits a crossword to the paper where we get the title of the movie, her All About Steve crossword that gets her fired, which she takes as a sign that she should take up Steve's offer to follow him on the road.
And we'll actually just a second, your intro about mentioning the word stalker, I think it was.
Yeah,
it was about this point of the movie that my, because as I said, I was feeling that Mary was perhaps misunderstood, and hey, you know, but then by now I'm sort of like, it was flipped and I'm like, okay, she's insane, this is going to become a stalker thing, dot dot dot. But then as we quite as we soon see it does, but her character takes a different turn. And this is that scene I was mentioning before, we go into the CCN offices then when I was going to say, when Thomas Hayden Church turns up, I can't remember. Was it Hampton Hughes or something like that was his character? I can't remember.
Yes, something along those lines.
Yes. Something the using alliteration. But I know it was the scene with him and Bradley and a couple of Steve and a couple of other characters. But I don't know, there was something about it. Whenever there were scenes with all the guys together, the dialogue was just so stupid and awkward. Whereas, especially when you knew what was happening next, I think it was there that we find out that there's been. Now, I know we had a horse apparently die, as we find that gets rectified. But what had happened? There'd been a shooting at the Wild West theme park or something.
Yeah. So they went to report on a hostage situation at a Wild West theme park. And
that's right. And was at that moment, Trevor, that I actually went, "Oh my gosh, that's the Universal backlot where they said it was filmed."
Oh, there we
so
go.
So the whole set there was in Los Angeles. So that's where. So we'll blame that scene for the reason I chose this movie.
That's a good. I did actually get a bit of a giggle though when they turn back and just see the horse lying there. And he's there getting more and more emotional and more choked up. And as he's doing that, the horse just gets up in the background and you find out it's a performing horse that's been trained to drop to the ground when it hears a gunshot or a truck backfire, which is what we find out that the gunshot was earlier.
Well, it's funny because you've got Bradley Cooper, or Steve, sorry, doing the whole finger running like to look like horse. And he goes, "I thought that meant rain."
And I thought that meant bring on the waterworks or something. That's why he's getting more and more emotional as this horse is walking around in the background quite happily and healthily alive.
But even though the whole, it was kind of cool, like the whole horse dead, no longer dead gag. It was, I think it was pretty much from this point on, actually it probably happened a few other times, where this movie kind of relied on sight gags or gags in general to kind of pick up the pace or to try to give it some laughs.
Yeah, there is a lot about just, the news crew being this
fumbling
news crew.
Around.
Because there's a whole subplot, about this news crew, Bradley Cooper and they've got like a minder or whatever and the newsreader who wants to become an anchor on the thing. And it follows them through as they try to redeem themselves after a tasteless move where they zoomed in on a very endowed woman's chest area. Yeah, very tasteful. And how everything they do either goes wrong or gets topped by this other news crew. They introduce a rival newsman at some point who has like a whole, a whole pavilion or whatever to work from.
But aside from, like, again, stepping ahead, aside from the little a stinger, I suppose, I don't know what the term is, at the very, very end of the movie regarding this rival news crew, that wasn't a subplot that really kind of, I thought it was going to go somewhere or become kind of something to do with the, I don't know, climax of the film, but sort of doesn't really go anywhere. I think it was just kind of showing that the media can be quite inept at times.
Yeah, I think it just added to the news crew hijinks sections of this movie.
And that was the thing.
Which there were a fair bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I've got a note here probably from much later in the movie when a lot of the stuff happens around the, I'll say the pit. I sound like I'm talking about Parks and Recreation, but anything to do with the mine shaft at the end of the movie. But yeah, it's like this movie is supposed to be exposing the media as bad guys the entire time, or almost trying to show the secrets behind the scenes. So, but I did like the spot when Mary's character ends up getting Bradley tangled up essentially and pulling him off the platform that's filming outside the hospital. But the thing is, he turns around and just sees her running and just assumes, okay, she's stalker. And I know that's one of, I'm probably jumping ahead again, but I think that's one of the moments in the movie too where he starts to get a bit paranoid and she starts to come off looking a bit more like the normal person.
Yeah, well, for a bit anyway, because it kind of like has a bit of a turn, yeah, at that hospital where she meets up with a couple of other, you know, misfits, I suppose you could call them, yeah. who are campaigning because apparently a child had been born with three legs.
I mentioned, yeah, sight gags and little gags. There was a lot of bad taste moments, like really obvious, mm-hmm, things and like little things to do with, oh, a baby's been born with three legs. But the fact that they called it Peggy, come on.
Yeah.
Like just little things like that where you're like, oh, I know. Just really obvious scenes where, you know, they're doing this just to set it up for her to meet those, I've just got here, rally friends that she ends up making, yeah, which is a really good turn for her. And I'm actually quite happy for the character when it happens, because it's almost like they give Mary a bit of a break and we sort of see her real side. But did it have to be under those circumstances?
Yeah. I mean, even then, so like we go off with them and like, you know, the, of course, one of them is a busty airhead who, you know, just seems to love everyone. And another guy is this awkward guy who makes apple sculptures of people's heads.
Which looked more like dough that he just molded together. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you know, that sort of like did give her, I suppose, I don't know if it really helped Mary seem like a more understandable character, but it kind of took some of the edge off, because they appeared to enjoy being with her, whereas everybody else just wanted her to shut up and leave. Or except for our friend the newsman, I've completely forgotten his name, who basically goes in there and deliberately goads Mary into not giving up. Yeah,
but yeah, I found that to be quite strange. Like, yeah, also, like, where did all that sort of come from?
He wanted her to hang around because he realized that her knowledge of things gave him more material that he could use in news broadcasts.
Oh, so, and then as we find out, I suppose, in the climax of the film revolving around the mine shaft, I suppose we do see that happening, because she does give them some news. But yeah, I found that a bit of a weird thing, why he was so adamant about her coming along. Like, I'm like, dude, he's even saying, no, I don't want you to come along. And he's behind going, ooh, you know, pretending to breastfeed a child. Like, it's quite strange. Like, But yeah, by this stage of the movie, you are sort of realizing something's not quite right. And yeah, that's, again, one of those other elements. But the part that I kind of, I don't know if appreciates the word, but we sort of get to the media tent outside the hospital, and Steve actually sums up, I think it's at the time when he goes, you know, Mary's not, you know, a stalker, she's just hyper. And I kind of appreciate it, because hyper wasn't so derogatory as a lot of the other stuff that people had been saying. And I kind of, I don't know, empathized with her a little bit more. But then we find out the part where she actually, he actually tries to reject her. And that's when I started to go, okay, is this going to become a revenge movie? And we find out it pretty much doesn't. She just ends up, how do we get to the cyclone? Sorry, I'm just, I'm remembering she's got her rally friends, and they end up deciding one of them, well, works out one of them can drive, so has a car that's not in very good condition. And the next thing, they come head on with there's a news report saying a bad storm's approaching. The next thing, they're in the eye of the cyclone.
Yeah, yeah. They, despite the reporter encouraging her to come along and essentially encouraging her to be a stalker, pretty much. That's exactly what he's doing, you know, very thoughtful. And she goes off with her friends, and the guy that makes the apple faces is driving in his car that apparently doesn't have reverse. and they're just driving along, and then suddenly there's a tornado appears just like right behind them, or right in front of them in the desert. They can't get away, so they've got to go hide in a drain, which also gives her opportunity when a locust hits her right in the face, and she's just going, "Oh, these only come around every 9 years. This is truly magical." Okay, fine. Okay.
But what I thought was interesting, not knowing much about cyclone attacks or anything like that, but it was quite, even though that they were in that storm drain, it was still very exposed. I was wondering why they probably should have gone a little bit further away from the opening. But then what I thought was quite funny is the reaction of him going, "Oh, that's my car," like he thought it was just going to be sitting there. But then I don't know if I'm wrong, you might have to correct me, but the car they end up driving to that fairground when the mine shaft in, that is not the car that ended up being flown in the air, is it? I thought they found one.
No, it is.
Oh my God. Because I remember going, okay, I can see that it's not going very well, but don't think that car would be going at all.
Yeah, well, it had no doors, and it had, they had a long line of cars behind it. But this was also about the time, because, again, the hiding in there, and it kind of fades off, and as it does, we get more merry narration with more crossword life analogies. I'm thinking, we've got the point. You can stop this now.
It's like, don't make Mary any more insane or misunderstood than she is.
It's like, you've well and truly made the point. To keep going is either to increase the craziness of this character, and not in a good way, or if we're meant to be sympathizing for this character, you really need to make a few changes, because at the moment I'm still thinking, I've got this brief bit of, you know, actually some positive interaction with this character, which is undone by just going back into this crazy talk we've been hearing all movie. Yeah. Make up your mind, movie.
And that's the problem with it, is when you are finally starting to sympathise with her and it's a sort of slow scene, the next scene will have her running after Bradley Cooper behind the bus and falling in a mineshaft or something like that.
Pretty much.
And just almost going for that whole sight gag, or, oh, isn't that funny, somebody falling in? And I think, like, I'm jumping ahead again, but yeah, we find out, don't know how we get to that point, but we do see a group of, oh, this again was one of, dare I say it, bad taste moments. Of course, it's a group of deaf kids going to experience a fair, and even before it happened, like, I think even the scene before, I don't have the quote here, but something's bad's going to happen. I can't remember, someone said something along the lines of, that's too good to be true, something bad's going to happen, and as soon as they cut to the deaf kids going to the fair, I'm like, you're not.
Yeah.
And it just became a very obvious thing, but I don't know what I was getting at by saying that, but I can't remember, but it ends up being very obvious, and that's the thing, as we find out later on, is even when we see the news captain or whatever watching the replay of her falling in the thing and coming back out again, you're just like, oh God, that's almost like the mentality of the people that made this movie.
Pretty much, yeah. I believe it was the newscast or the news reporter who basically is there going, you know, that he needs a real disaster so he can get a good story.
That's right. And next shot,
kids coming out of these woods on the opposite side of a field to a fair. I don't know why they just didn't, you know, have their field trip drive up to the car park of the county fair.
Oh, like,
they had one.
Could you imagine all the minders going, let's get a whole group of blind kids to run half a mile to the bloody fair while we watch and wave?
Yeah.
And go I ahead. Actually didn't think it would become, I didn't think it would be them falling the mine shaft. So again, that was sort of a bit of a spin. I thought it'd become a big scene of them at the fair and something happens at the fairground. I don't know. I thought the Ferris wheel might come dislodged or something, but no, they disappear in the ground before they even get there.
Fall down a hole in the middle of a open field. I'm going to stress that now because there's a line a bit later on that I'll come back to. About this mine shaft that just opens up in the middle of a completely open field with nothing there, no trees or anything else. Is the woods, there's a great open field, and then there's a fun fair. Okay? Yeah. So I want to stress it right now because it becomes relevant a bit later on.
And this pretty much essentially becomes the last third of the movie, this whole, I'll say, fair scene, you know, involving the mineshaft. And it sort of doesn't leave you with the best. A lot more could have been done than was, let's just say. So obviously we find out the big report is the kids have fallen in. So, oh, wow, what's going to happen? And then it's all a big report about that. But then it all becomes, again, goes back to Mary being so obsessed with Steve that she has to be. I was waiting, actually, throughout this whole movie for her to be in the background of some shot trying to get his attention. And that was this.
Yeah, of course, it was the one where she's so obsessed with getting to him that she goes, but like, nobody tries to stop her. She gets, like, earlier on, there's this thing about all these emergency workers telling everyone to step back, the ground's not stable, step back, you can't come any closer. And yet she walks straight through all of them. There's, like, nothing in her way, no guard tape or anything like that. And then she, yeah, doesn't even notice anything. And halfway across the field, down the hole she goes.
But then I don't know if it was also too, but the way it was filmed, but she falls in and there's almost that delayed reaction, like there is with normal things, for a while where no one sort of even noticed that she fell in. And even though it ends up becoming a big panic that she has, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's very slow to sort of catch on. Oh, someone's fallen in the pit.
Yeah, because Bradley Cooper is like seems to be the only one that notices, and he doesn't even say anything or react any particular way. It's just kind of him looking past the news reporter, and then the news reporter goes, "What, did someone fall down the well?" Oh, okay, great. I mean, this is after they had apparently rescued all the hearing impaired kids, but as we find out when we catch up with Mary down the bottom of the mineshaft, there was one little girl left behind, which is just, again, you think by that stage, somebody would have noticed.
Oh, I'm thinking to myself, maybe the mine is still on the other side of the field, not even realizing what happened. But there was a part, the part that kind of annoyed me the most is when they did finally, okay, so, you know, we know the end of the movie is mainly, you know, them trying to get out, but there was a part later on where she goes, okay, little deaf girl, we're going to get out. And it just kind of, again, those little digs, just a little tiny bit of a knife cut, you know, with bits of bad taste where you just kind of like, couldn't you have just gone, come on, little girl, we're leaving, you know?
Yeah.
But it just kind of had to reinforce the whole deaf thing one more time. And it just kind of, yeah, that kind of really irked me a little bit. But like, I did see the Academy Award winner come through when she was getting quite emotional in the cave, and I'm not saying she gave an Academy Award winning performance, but you know, she was getting quite teary, and I could sort of see, you know, especially when she started spouting all the negatives people had said to her, and it kind of, you know, you could kind of feel, you know, you'd feel for the character a lot, where she was like, you know, oh, you'll never be anything, or you're just a crossword puzzler, or you need to be normal. She started saying all that stuff, and that kind of, you know, gave you a lot of sympathy for the character.
Yeah, and they even finally explained about the red boots, where no one ever asked me why I wear my red boots. I just see my red boots. I wear my red boots because it feels like all my toes are having a warm hug. Well, that's kind of cute, but it fits a character. But at the same time, you're having her getting all emotional and actually having a sympathize with this character, and then she says this completely bizarre thing.
It's not the big reveal we expected. Like, you kind of expected it to be something like, my mother wore these in the 60s and she was exactly like me, or something. Even though we know her mum's still alive. But, you know, you kind of expected it to have a bit more of a heartfelt sort of connection or reason.
And then they follow on with all that with the hearing impaired girl, because even though Mary can't do sign language, but the only thing she can't do, she can still understand it. And then the little girl signs to her, and she confesses, saying, "I can't really understand all you're saying, but you talk too much." So basically, even then, have the hearing impaired girl telling her to shut up. Oh, ha ha, movie.
But that's actually kind of, you know, something. Like, even though it was kind of a bit of a gag, I kind of appreciated that. It was almost like the deaf girl seemed to be the only one that sort of summed up the Mary character better than anybody. Like, you know, the whole thing. Yeah, she does talk too much. But the other thing, I don't know if it was a bit after that, where she goes, "Why do you need to be normal?" And it was just sort of, so I think the deaf girl actually said more than any of the characters in this movie in terms of that sort of stuff. But again, it was sort of put aside as sort of a gag or a situational joke. Like,
But, you know, they were trapped down there. Just to come back to a few other things, they managed to get all but one of the kids out with a great big crane. And then after Mary dropped down and they thought they were going to use the crane again, suddenly the ground moves again, the crane can't be used, and they go, can we bring a helicopter over? No, we can't. There's power lines. Where? Where? You're in the middle of an open field. There's no power lines. Oh, what?
I just don't think they could be bothered doing it.
Let's just throw an excuse as to why a helicopter can't be there. There was no reason a helicopter couldn't be there except for alleged power lines that weren't bloody there. Sorry, I had to get it off my chest. That really bugged me.
But I did love, like we mentioned earlier, about how it was trying to expose the media as bad guys. Excuse me, I kind of appreciated the little little sight gags, like they found a picture of Mary when she had braces and they'd superimpose it on her body falling in the well and, you know, pretending to drown and things like that. Like, it was very real, not realistic, but sort of stuff that you see media doing where they sort of take one image and run with it. So I kind of appreciated those little bits, but, you know, it was a little bit too little too late making the media out as bad guys. But as we find out with the whole pit thing too, what is it? No, the opposition guy. The guy from the other news thing. We find out he says something about, why didn't I think of that? And we see it come back again. But aside from that, it's all very much Mary the hero and all these people that are apparently surrounding her that you think to yourself, well, she hasn't really made that many friends along the journey.
Well, yeah, kind of like it was her Mary's quirky friends from the rally that they started their own rally at the mine site, you know, all about saving Mary and lighting peace candles for Mary. And of course, the people are interviewing her parents and this groundswell about how sweet this Mary is. And you know, the rather spectacular fail of a rescue by the newscaster when, in a serious moment, Steve basically just says, you encouraged her to be here. This is your fault. It is my fault. So he goes and grabs a hose
that becomes dislodged very quickly. Fire engine,
and then, yeah, just jumps in the hole and just the hose just comes unplugged. So he goes plunging down to the bottom. So Mary, who was about to rescue herself and the hearing impaired girl, has to include rescuing him as well.
Oh,
but then she lets it look like he's the one doing the rescuing.
Oh, that annoyed me how he comes out and there's that shot of him doing the whole, you know, aye, Captain, you know, I've done it, you know. And it kind of annoyed me. I kind of wanted her to rescue herself and then kind of explain herself and then something come and get her. But the part that I find funny is when she did finally, you know, work out how to get them up there, you just think, it's just a lot of standing around. I know the ground was apparently insecure, but insecure, you know, whatever the word is, you know, could cave at any moment. I just don't think enough attempts were made to rescue them in the first place.
They made a bit of an offhand comment, like with the helicopter one. There was an offhand comment of saying, when's that second crane going to get here? And that was it. Basically, they're all waiting around for another crane. That was pretty much the entire justification of the fact that they were just standing around in a big circle and doing nothing.
And like, I did appreciate the fact that, you know, we've seen movies like this before where she, you know, in this case, comes out of the mine shaft and all of the friends that she's made along the way are all cheering. But it's like what you said, they're all very much the rally friends. I would have appreciated it more if she had made a bit more of a journey and met all these different people along the way. But instead, she's just got this cheer squad of, you just left the hospital, come over and join me over here. But the part that probably, like, I know this happens in a lot of movies, especially of this sort of kind, but it did sort of annoy me how Steve was kind of liked her now that she was popular. That kind of came across a lot to me. Like, yeah, he finally changed his tune.
yeah, there was this whole thing. It went on for ages, just really, you know, all the things they could have done to make us more sympathetic towards Mary through the other two-thirds of this movie all gets piled into this final section where it gets super serious and everyone learns things. You know, Mary learns things about herself. Steve realizes that Mary really is a nice person. But, you know, I think, like, when they come face-to-face and it's kind of like, you know, they're not going to be a couple. I mean, I was kind of thinking, are they going to actually, Steve going to fall for her right at the end? But he really didn't, which I appreciated.
Oh, definitely.
But he still, you know, he still came to understand her a bit better and accept her for who she was. And she even made a line about saying, you know, now you can get on with life without having a crazy stalker. It's like, okay, that's interesting.
So it's like she realized what she was actually doing.
Yeah, she realized what she was doing.
Because he definitely changes his tune. I think there's that one spot where he interrupts Thomas Hayden Church on camera and says, no, you know, Mary's actually just misunderstood and, you know, a little bit wordy and a bit, you know, knowledgeable and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, she's actually a great person. And I think, I thought it would follow through as the obvious, we'll fall in love now.
Yeah, that's one thing I definitely appreciate this movie not doing is not forcing them to actually end up together.
And probably, yeah, that's what I know we've mentioned, you know, a lot of times the voiceovers were a bit annoying, especially through the movie. But one voiceover I did appreciate was at the end where she goes, you know, if you have to stalk a guy, he obviously wasn't worth it in the first place. And that kind of summed up why she didn't end up with him, which, yeah, I appreciated too.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, that's basically where we fade out. And again, a bit more crosswords theme stuff during the closing credits.
And just a very 90s sounding song. I can't actually remember off the top of my head, but I did watch it all the way to the end. And we get our final stinger. I don't know if a stinger's the word, if it's not highlighting another movie that's coming out. But we see the opposing newscaster just go, stuff it, I'm going to jump in a pit, and that's it.
Yeah, he goes, I am the news, and yeah, jumps into the mineshaft after everyone's left.
Don't know if it was really worth it. Okay, no. Guys, you're psych acts. Yeah.
All right, whatever, that was pointless, but hey, I guess you were trying for one last laugh after all the serious bit at the end of the movie. It didn't work. Anyway, moving on.
Wow.
Yeah, I think we made it to the end of All About Steve.
Here we go. So, yeah, definitely. So, I have quite a few notes, and I'm glad we got through them. So, thanks for bearing with us as we jumped around quite a lot.
That's fine. I mean, look, what's the point of recapping a movie? I mean, really? We're not here to do that.
Especially this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you did pick All About Steve. So, I shall go first with my thoughts as to the redeemability of this movie.
Definitely.
Okay, well, I mean, through most of this movie, it was hard to know if Sandra Bullock was more annoying or more creepy. Basically, this was hailed as a comedy. To be honest, Christian, I only got one brief laugh out loud at this entire movie, and that was the horse gag. And there were times in the movie where it was a subplot, but there were times when it seemed to turn into more of a movie about the news crew getting what they wanted, as opposed to actually Mary having resolution. I mean, Mary's resolution was, hey, I got accepted by society after being on the news, whereas the news reporter is basically guaranteed to get his anchor position after reporting about Mary. The music choices were very much on the nose. I mean, the whole short skirt, long jacket thing, crowbarred in there. There was another point where she came running across this bridge towards Bradley Cooper, and they decided to play I Will Follow Him. I was going, really? No? Come on. I don't mind songs complimenting what's happening, but in this particular movie, they literally used lyrics and songs to tell you what would happen. I mean, you know, so much for, I don't know how else to put it. The music was like, they wanted the music to directly tell you the plot rather than compliment what was going on. It did get very, very super sappy at the end with all the learning and the feelings, which was probably the best part of the movie, which is kind of odd. But at the end of the day, look, this movie wasn't funny, with its quirky lead who was eternally annoying and creepy through most of the movies, and at times was almost secondary to the secondary plot. So I'm going to say at the end of the day, Christian, not enough going for this one. It's not redeemable.
Ooh, Trevor. Interesting. There's so many times I was nodding my head going, yeah, I see what you mean. So now, I haven't prepared anywhere near as much to sort of say to round it up, but I echo a lot of what you're saying. And like we say with a lot of movies on redeeming features, it didn't know the tone. And I think the biggest problem was you didn't know Mary was supposed to be played as a stalker or she was misunderstood. And I don't know if that was anything to do with Sandra Bullock. And hey, maybe she was worthy of winning the Razzie. Maybe she didn't play this character properly, but I think the biggest problem was a bad script. This had such a bad script and a lot of very awkward dialogue. And a lot of times too, probably not the script's fault, but a lot of times with cinematography, they stoop to a bit of a bad taste with a bit of a sight gag or a very easy gag as a bit of a cop-out. And I don't know, that kind of left a bit of a bad taste in my mouth. So you did mention the resolution, or you know, and I found the resolution of the whole thing quite underwhelming, or the fact that she'd met all these... supposedly all these new friends along her journey, when really two people should have been there going, woo, instead of this big fan club. I don't know. Maybe I was watching a different movie. So I found that quite underwhelming. So it's a hard one, Trevor. Like, I think it was a good concept, badly executed with a bad script. I don't think Sandra Bullock is to blame, and definitely any of the other cast. But I definitely am going to say this movie is irredeemable.
There we go. All About Steve from 2009. Not redeemable.
Ooh, I can't remember what we said about Speed 2 Cruise Control. You'll have to tune into that, listeners.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that myself.
But I don't know if Sandra's had a good rap on the Rufus Project, so you'll have to revisit that one, listeners. But
I don't think Speed 2 fared very well, actually, come to think of it. But
so, sorry, Sandra.
There we go. 2 from 2, not redeemable for Sandra Bullock. But you know what? We may not have redeemed this movie, but it does indeed have its fans.
Wow, you found a good review. Wow.
I did indeed. Now, we may not have been able to redeem it, but we do like to finish on a high note. So I've got another review here, culled from Amazon. The title of this review is An Adventure with a Nerdy and Socially Awkward Sweetheart. Now, just to let you know, there is some stuff in all caps. And as we know, all caps on the internet is shouting, so I shall have to read this properly, okay? All About Steve is a viewer's journey of getting to know Mary, Sandra Bullock's character, and I enjoyed every minute. Mary is the kind of person that many so-called normal folks might belittle. Even those with us with an open heart may find it hard to like a person like Mary. But this movie takes all of us on an adventure with this nerdy and socially awkward sweetheart with the premise that we will all fall in love. And I did. I took away a message from this film. Don't be quick to judge. Give people a chance. You may be surprised. You may fall in love. This is my opinion. Yours may be different. 5 stars.
Oh, wow. I think that review was made 5 stars from you shouting all the caps.
Well, that's how internet works. Got to read it properly.
So I think maybe, aside from how we were feeling, I think people are thinking this movie was just maybe misunderstood, or the character was.
Quite possibly. I've got to admit, in ways, especially after talking to you and some of the stuff we repeat, I can see things in this movie that could have been done better to make a good movie, which I think sometimes makes it even more of a travesty when it's not. You know, when you can see where a movie can be good, but it's not, it makes it even worse.
Oh, definitely. and we've watched a few movies like that, but
we have.
I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but Trevor, I'm interested to know what the next one may be.
Well, absolutely. I think that's about that time, and it is indeed my turn. So, Christian, we are going to check out a sequel that was 15 years in the making.
I love a sequel, and when it's got a bigger gap, it's got more anticipation, so...
Yes, well, the 2001 original is a much-loved comedy which was praised at the time for its take on the world it was parodying. The sequel, however, met with lackluster reviews, its fair share of controversy, poor box office performances, and a swathe of Razzie nominations. So we're going to head back to the heady old days of 2016 to check out Zoolander 2.
Oh, I knew this would come at some stage, Trevor, and I'm glad it has, because I had forgotten. But I did see it once around Christmas time last year, you know, very late at night. But I think I need to watch it with the redeeming features blinkers on. So I'm up for the challenge.
Fantastic. Now, if anybody wants to check out Zoolander 2 before our next podcast, it is available to stream on Netflix, or you can rent or buy it on Google Play, iTunes, YouTube, and the Microsoft Store, or buy it outright on the PlayStation Store. Those are your options. Go watch Zoolander 2.
Ah, fantastic. I'm looking forward to revisiting it. Something that might be a bit more potentially redeemable.
Well, we shall see how we go. I mean, I think I've picked movies before thinking, oh, this will totally be redeemable. Then I put my redeeming features hat on and just go, what was I thinking?
We'll see what happens with this one.
We shall indeed. So, from movies of questionable quality to awesome, awesome things you can do about around Brisbane if you attend a Christian Fletcher event. Christian, what events do you have coming up?
Oh, look, so many things as always, but Metro Arts, we're screening everything from Pink Flamingos, Neverending Story, Wedding Singer, 20th Anniversary, Clerks, Neverending Story, I probably already said that, Pretty in Pink, Clue, Barbarella, Goodfellas, Poltergeist, The Hunger, Lost Boys. Okay, I won't bore everybody with that, but that's happening till the end of the year, and we've just announced our Halloween program. Now, Rocky Horror, which is not back until September, I'm going to let everybody know, is Friday the 21st of September, so get in now and book your tickets. Brisbane, Australia's biggest Madonna party is back on the 18th of August in Brisbane at the Wickham Hotel, and book your tickets for that now, so you're best to head to christianfletcher.com or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook.
Absolutely, and on the Rufus Project side of things, kind of had a bit of a break and a lot of the extra stuff at the moment. I do realize I haven't put out any one credit challenges for a week or so. They are coming back. Don't worry about that. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you need to check out the Rufus Project YouTube channel, where you can get a lot of retro gaming goodness. I stream live on YouTube. Various old arcade games to see how I go with one credit, hence the one credit challenge. And you can also catch YouTube versions of this podcast and our sister podcast, What the History, where I and my wife Susie talk about a couple of bizarre bits of history to make you say what the history is. So that's always a good thing to check out.
Definitely, and very highly recommended. So, from movies of questionable quality to interesting historical tidbits, I thoroughly recommend it.
We cover a range here at the Rufus Project, so yeah, it's always fun.
Definitely.
Okay, and if you would like to get in touch with us, that's really, really easy to do. You can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this very episode. You can find the Rufus Project on Twitter and Facebook, or you can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com, or even leave comments on our YouTube content. It's all up to you and is so, so easy to do.
Definitely. So, even as I always say, Trevor, if the movie's not any good, our chat always is.
Absolutely. So I think it's probably a good place to wrap that up then. We could not redeem All About Steve, but we'll be back in a couple of weeks to see what we can do with Zoolander 2. So until then, enjoy watching whatever you enjoy watching, even if you're wrong about it, and we will catch you next time. Farewell.
He was once the world's most famous male model. Even his looks were household names. La Tigra, Magnum, and of course, Blue Steel. But that was a long, long, long time ago.
Old LeMay?
We were a joke out there.
I guess fashion's changed.
Meet the biggest supermodel in the whole world is all.
Are you like a male model or a female model?
All is all.
I think he's asking, do you have a hot dog or a bun?
Oops.
Derek Zoolander, I'm with Interpol. I need your help.
She's hot. I trust her.
Someone's trying to kill the world's most beautiful people.
Oh, fudge!
Peace out, world.
All of them died with your signature look. This is blue steel, right? We need you to infiltrate the world of high fashion.
We're back!
Yeah! Are you sure Zoolander is the right man to help us?
Hey, handsome!
What the hell is your problem?
God help us all. You were amazing.
I'm sorry, I can't understand a word that you're saying.
Derek, toss me the knife.
You got it!
There's only one criminal mastermind who could be behind all this.
Prison changed me! I am bad to the core now! Todd, where's my goddamn latte?
But how am I supposed to stop Mugatu?
I'm the Mamba Majamba! I'm the Mamba Majamba!
You're Derek Zoolander. He stopped a Chinese throwing star with a look. Flash me that beautiful Magnum.
Wait, Magnum, now!
Oh!
You have this!
Oh!
Yeah!
Tequila!
Oh!
Maybe we could try a washcloth.
Ah! Ah!
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. Oh, what's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
I had to add this addendum to the podcast because there was something about this movie that really did bug me, and I couldn't quite place what it was until the morning after we recorded the podcast you just listened to. Basically, the character of Mary in this movie shows a lot of signs that could easily be associated with high-functioning autism, from the inability to pick up on social cues, the ability to just absorb and recall knowledge regardless of whether anybody else around is interested in listening to that, and even to her jumping up and down in excitement, which you get to see a few times during the movie. I do know these signs quite well, as I am quite close to someone who is a high-functioning autistic individual. Now, this wouldn't be too much of an issue outside of, well, maybe get an autistic actor to portray an autistic character, always assuming it was deliberate, and if it was deliberate, it's a pretty poor portrayal, to be honest. But the biggest problem comes from the fact that it was played as reasons for people to be cruel to Mary, to make cheap jokes, and to basically create this annoying character that we have discussed in length in the podcast you've just listened to. This realization, whether it was a deliberate choice by the filmmakers or not, has really raised this to be an even more of a deplorable, unredeemable movie than what you've just heard us declare. Simply put, if someone is a bit different and maybe you don't quite understand them, you know what? Just be nice. I'm not saying anyone needs to go out of their way to really make a big song and dance. I try to follow the rule of don't be a dick. And I kind of get the feeling that if more people follow that rule, the world might be a nicer place. I think that's enough moralizing for now. I shall now let you get on with your life and we never have to talk about this deplorable movie ever again. Or at least until we list the worst movies we've watched for the year just gone come Christmas time, because I get the feeling this one's going to rank pretty high in my list. Catch you later.